This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on September 17, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
Welcome on my part as well to everyone that's here, and I want to express how happy I am to be here, 1,350 miles away from where I call home in Sawyer, Kansas. And I just want to say Kansas is not like Pennsylvania, and Sawyer is not like Effort or New Holland or East Earl. And we have a joke, and other people say this about us as well, and they say this about Kansas and where I've lived, especially in the western part of the state of Kansas. They say, it's not the end of the world, but you can see it from here. And so it's always a treat to come to the east, whether it's Ohio or Pennsylvania, where there are a lot more people and a lot more happening, it seems like, and yet we appreciate our rural state and our rural beauty there as well. And I said this yesterday, hadn't intended to say it today, but I think I'll just say it again, that you're all welcome there, and we would love to see you, but you might think about not all coming at the same time. I don't know how we would be able to handle that. I want to share something just on the very front end here, just by way of introduction, that as a speaker, and I think all speakers perhaps feel this in part, we have our little insecurities and our fleeting thoughts. And I just want to share one of mine this morning. And it's common, and often before we speak, we have this thought just kind of flit through our mind. We think, do I really have anything to share here this morning to this group? And I look from this end all the way to this end, and I think of every life and every home and every household and every budget represented here. And I think, do we really have something worthy and worthwhile to share? The topic, again, is biblical money management, and that sounds very deep and broad and heavy, if you will, and important. And I think, do we have anything important to share? And that is a fleeting thought, and we come back to a feeling of assurance. And I want to tell you why we feel a feeling of assurance this morning. And one reason why is because we believe that above all, God is interested in the topic that we have here today. We think it's relevant to God above all, or we wouldn't be talking about it. And second of all, I want to say it's a topic that's of great interest to me. All through my lifetime, for some reason, I've had a drawing and an interest in personal finance and managing household finances and so forth. I'm not the best budgeter in the world, and I wouldn't even want to share with you on the screen up here all the mistakes I've made in my decision-making around money. But we've learned some things too, and we're still working at it. And that brings me to my third point. Not only is God interested, and not only am I interested, but as I look across this whole group of people here today, I feel a kinship with you, because we're working at it together. And sometimes we succeed and sometimes we fail, but we're working at it together. And I'm 57 years old, and I look through the crowd and I see some 57-year-olds probably, or thereabouts, but I've got a family still at home, and I have a son. Out of six children, I have one son, five daughters, and I have one son, and he's 16 years old, and he's weeks away from 17. And I would just say, we're working at this together. And in that, I feel a kinship with you. And I was struck this morning as I gathered here. We were here for the business seminar yesterday, and I'm struck with the youth that I see here. And rather than scaring me off, it gives me a feeling of kinship. And number one, we have less answers than you even think we do. We're in this together. We're fighting the same battle that you are in life. But we have a son that's 16, and since I've been here, we text with our phones, and he texted me, and he texted me something like this. And he wouldn't want me sharing this, but I'm not going to reveal anything too much. But he said, I paid so-and-so. And I paid so-and-so, and I knew who he was referencing. I knew what he was talking about. And he said, and I settled up with this other person, and I've still got such and such left in my account. So I knew what he meant. I knew who he was paying. I knew what he was paying him for. And I knew what he meant when he said, I've got this much left in my account. And that's my point, is that we're working at this together, just like you are. And so that gives me a feeling of great assurance as we move into this heavy, really, topic of biblical money management. And we need to move forward into it. And so I'm going to go to the next slide and further introduce the topic here. Ivan already well shared a very important point, and that is the context here is our own personal finances. It's not business. You're here largely because you're employees of businesses. Yesterday was a business seminar, but I remember when they first asked me to talk on this topic, they acknowledged that it's a little bit unique because we're actually going to talk to the personal needs of the attendees. And why were they going to do that? One is because we benefit as employees of a business. And so you employees here are employees of a business, and you benefit from that business. You benefit from the financial success of that business. That goes without saying. It provides for the needs that you have to provide for your family and so forth. But next point here is stable employees benefit employers. And so we provide something to our employers by providing a stable lifestyle. And that involves our finances as well as other things. In other words, we need our employers, but our employers need us. And they need us for more than just the work we provide. They need and they have an interest in the stability of our lives, and that reaches even into our very finances. The thought process is the same regardless. In other words, financial truths are relevant in business just like they are in the household, and they're relevant in the household much like they are in the business. Now, the numbers are different, and the way we organize them in a P&L is somewhat different. We look at different things and different metrics, but the financial principles are largely the same. And so for you today to think more about personal finance will make you a better employee. That will bring value to your employer even as they bring value to you. And so I would like to just share very broadly what we intend to do here this morning. We would like to actually share a little thought, and we're going to try to be brief with it. We're going to share three slides, and we're going to go very quickly with them. But we're going to look back at what we shared yesterday with the business owners and managers, everyone that was here yesterday, about the topic of business planning. And specifically, we talked to them about the importance of strategy in business planning. We said, it doesn't really matter what your budget says if you don't have the right strategy. So we would like to share three slides here that are the same slides from yesterday, and we're sharing them with you here today. What is the business planning process? This is what we shared at the business seminar yesterday. The process of business planning is a path of discovery involving business owners and others. I'll just stop there. Business planning, the process of business planning is a path of discovery. I want to acknowledge right up front here that the way we've chosen to address this topic is to not get into budgeting. The mechanics of budgeting and percentages for different categories of expenses, but rather we would focus on the why of budgeting, and that leads us into the realm of strategy. So the process of business planning or the process of budgeting for our household is a path of discovery involving all of the people that it relates to. I'm just going to say this, and then I'm going to move beyond this slide. It is more important in my household that Ruby, my wife of 30 years and a couple of weeks, it's more important that we're in harmony with the strategy of our spending than exactly what the percentages are in each of our categories. And I'm just going to that briefly move on. The Greek word strategio means the general's view of the battlefield. It suggests that to be strategic is to be comprehensive. In other words, strategy is a belief that we have or a decision that we make about the way things are going to be that transcends all of the specifics. And I think we're just going to move on. I think you'll understand what we mean as we try to unfold the topic here this morning. We shared a graphic then yesterday, and I want you to just think of this graphic like the little Russian nesting dolls, I think they're called, where there's a fair-sized doll, and they're made out of wood, and they've got a seam there in the middle, and you pull it apart, and there's another little doll inside it that looks almost exactly the same, and yet it's smaller, it's different, and you open it up, and there's another one inside, and so forth. It's a set of dolls. Well, this is like that. And all I really want to say about it here is that the action plan or the budget, the decisions that we make about spending, they relate to something bigger. And that something bigger relates to something yet bigger still. And whether or not I buy that cup of coffee for $5 actually relates to something bigger in my life. And we're not here to tell you this morning whether it's okay or not to buy a $5 cup of coffee. And we're going to reveal our age here, but we remember when Starbucks was new in the Northwest and that coffee craze and phenomenon that took over the Northwest, Seattle and then beyond a little bit, and we just thought, that coffee thing, it's never going to make its way to Western Kansas. But you know what? It did. It did. And my 16-year-old son now, as well as my daughters, they think it's normal to spend $5 for a cup of coffee. And you know what else? We do too. I don't know how many were here yesterday, but Richie Lauer talked about we weren't born in the 50s. Neither were we born in the 30s. And we can pretend about how we would live life if we lived then, but we live right now in 2025. That's the world that we live in. We pulled in the parking lot this morning, and I couldn't even help myself. I just looked right down through the parking lot, and I saw a sign that said, coffee, Twin Valley, maybe coffee. These thoughts just roll through your mind. That's how rich we live, and how abundantly we're blessed, and how affluent we are. And I would just say that the strategy of our spending matters more than ever. And again, we're not going to tell you that it's wrong to buy coffee. But we are going to talk about five lifestyle strategies. And again, we're not going to talk about budgeting here this morning, but just to help you as younger people, and some of you are same age bracket as I am, and once again, I'm still working at this as well. In fact, I see some of this more clearly now than I did then, and that's one of the reasons we feel free to talk about it. But the strategy that we have regarding provision and regarding restraint, and regarding the way we view other people, and regarding risk, and regarding debt, our strategy in these various areas will have far more to do with our budget and our financial outcomes, and perhaps far more to do with the way that we glorify the God of heaven with the way we manage our money, or not, than whether our food spending is at 10% or 11%. Now that's valuable, and that's a metric, that's a guideline that's worthy of looking at. And if this were a budgeting workshop where we were going to roll up our sleeves and get into budgeting more deeply, we would care about those things, and I care about those things. But that's not our particular focus here today. Instead, we want to spend a little time talking about strategy. I just want to talk about a strategy of provision. Kind of almost goes without saying, we're called to provide. We're not all men here today. We notice a lot of ladies as well, but I would say primarily we're here as men. And God has called men to provide, and He's called for a woman to be a keeper. And I know there are special circumstances where women must go out and provide, but primarily it's a responsibility of men to provide. And Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said, if any provide not for his own, and especially those of his own house, not people around the world, especially, we're going to get to that in a moment, but especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith, and he's worse than an infidel. He's worse than an unbeliever. He's worse than a pagan. He's not just as bad as, he's worse if he won't provide. And so our first strategy, and maybe this is the simplest one to talk about, is we're called to provide. We go to work to provide. It should put a smile on our face to go to work to provide for those that we love at home. I talked to my wife a little bit last evening about me being here. I flew here, and it's a solo trip. And it kind of goes against some of our principles to travel alone. And she shared with me, she said, I know this isn't our ideal to be apart from each other, but she said, I accept the fact that this is best for now. And this is part of the way that you provide for us. And I appreciate that. And so we're here trying to provide. That's part of our work. That's what we're doing. Now, we have a joy in being here as well. It's not just about providing. We're trusting we're doing it with a smile on our face. Now, I trust there's nobody here that has actually withheld provision from their family. And yet, I just want to say this, even in this time of abundance and affluence, we have experienced some sad situations where men have not provided. Through slothfulness, we're just going to be real frank here, through stubbornness and through selfishness, maybe through ignorance, not in the situations I'm referring through inability, they have not provided for their families, and it's created a burden for their families and for the church and even for the community. And so we have a calling to provide, and that should be a part of our strategy. That should be part of why we get up in the morning and go to work, is because we have the joy of providing. There's some more thoughts there on that slide you might look at later, but I think we're going to move on just to keep touching some of our other strategies. The second strategy we want to talk about is a strategy of restraint. We mentioned this earlier, and I used the word restraint. I didn't hardly know what else to do, but I just want to go back to the coffee example, and we could get up here and we could really pound on the podium and make a big point, and sometimes we hear teaching like that about how affluent we are, and we live in this post-industrial world, and it's a post-Christian world, and we've got more than we, you know, and it's not wrong to hear some of that teaching. But we're just accepting it as a fact that most of us in this room, many of us, maybe most of us, have never gone without. We've had more than we ever need. We have more money and more time than we hardly know what to do with. And we live lives that are not like our family members back in the 30s and back in the 50s. And we have this tendency to think it's normal. And we have this tendency to allow our own personal standard of living to rise up to the level of our income and then beyond. My dad didn't teach me directly a lot about personal finances, but I do remember him sharing this saying with me, and maybe your dad has shared it with you as well. It's just a simple little saying that helps us think about this strategy of restraint, and it goes like this. If your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. It's just a way of saying, if you don't live somewhere under the income that God has allowed you to provide, you will break your budget. You won't be able to maintain that which you want to maintain. So restraint is just the idea of living within the provision that God has allowed us to make by the work of our hands. And we share this scripture, 1 Timothy 6 and 6. It's a simple math formula here. A plus B equals C. Paul is saying to Timothy, he's saying, if you take godliness and you take contentment, you've got great gain. And we're inherently drawn, and we would just say as young men, maybe more than older men, we're inherently drawn to great gain. We're drawn to the idea of big things and great gain. And it's not all wrong. It's not all wrong for young men to have push and a desire for more and a desire to grow and to obtain. And yet the simple math formula is godliness with contentment is great gain. And that's what I mean by a strategy of restraint. It's cultivating a spirit of contentment in the midst of the abundance that we possess. A man's life consisteth not the abundance of the things which he possesseth, Jesus taught us. And that's what we mean by a strategy of restraint. I think we've already mentioned this. It's common to let our standard of living rise to the bottom of our income. And it's common as well to go beyond. And when we get involved, whether it's in the church or through Anabaptist Financial, however it is, when we get involved in somebody that's in financial trouble, a troubled household finance, it's often because, not always, and I don't want to put everybody in the same box, but it's often not because the budget was incomplete, although there might have been an incomplete budget, but because the strategy of restraint was wrong. We do not feel like, and we're not here to talk about this in detail, and it would be good to hear teaching on this as well, but we're not here to talk about boats and about RVs and about fishing trips. There was some talk about them yesterday, actually, but we're not really going to talk about those things, and we're not going to condemn those things here this morning. That's not our purpose. Our purpose here is to think about our strategy in life and living a strategy of restraint, of holding back and holding down even our own fleshly impulses below that of our standard of living, our income, if you will. We seek to live a life of biblical prudence, thinking ahead to future spending alternatives. In other words, we restrain ourselves today because even of the thought of tomorrow. Now there's something else that calls us to restrain ourselves and our own impulses in spending. And we'll find that as we move on. It might be our very next one, and it is. And that is a strategy for others. Again, we're trying to develop the thought here that what matters more than our budget and more than all of our specific individual spending decisions is the way we view restraint and the way we view provision. And now, thirdly, the way we view others around us. And is it possible that we should restrain our spending so that we could be freer to bless others around us? How many times we've come up against the reality that we feel like we should help someone, but we can't because we simply don't have the room to do so. Paul, again, writing to Timothy, his spiritual son, and he said this. And he said this toward those that are rich. Charge them that are rich in this world. And this was part of the counsel that he gave to those that are rich in this world. And we don't want to take the time to refer back to it here, but we heard yesterday in one of our sessions that generally speaking, there may be an exception or two here today, but generally speaking, we're all rich and highly favored and abundantly blessed. And Paul said, charge them that are rich in this world that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute and willing to communicate. We just have a few bullet points here to kind of elaborate on that thought, and I thought I'd just tell a story. And I told you early on that we would be embarrassed if you saw the reality of all of our decisions, because they're not all right, and we fail in this financial area ourselves. And last Saturday morning we had in our church, we call them council meetings, and we have quarterly council meetings because they're regular, they're scheduled, and sometimes we call special ones. But a council meeting is just to deal with matters within the church, business matters. Not just money matters, but things that relate to the care of the church. And one of the things that we always do at the beginning of our regular quarterly councils is we we provide contribution to our church treasury. And so there's an opportunity given for free will offerings, not on a weekly basis for us, but there at our quarterly councils. And I can't tell you how many times, but it's probably been 4 out of 5 that I go to council meeting and I've never put any thought into offering funds to contribute to our treasury. And so it just so happens that my wife and I could see each other there in our council meeting, and it came time. It came time to what we call lay together funds to contribute to our treasury. And I kind of looked at her and kind of raised my eyes, and she kind of looked at me and raised her eyes, and she could tell by the look in my face that I was completely blank. I hadn't made any preparation to make a contribution. Now, thankfully, because we share in this strategy of giving what we can together, she and I, she had a check, and she passed it up to me, a blank check, and I filled it out and made a contribution to our church treasury. Now, I offer that as an example, certainly, of how I failed, but my point is this. The actual giving is not as painful as the strategy and the preparation. I just about failed to give because I failed to prepare. And that's what this scripture means. Ready to distribute. It speaks of prior intention and planning to give. We tend to not give impulsively. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we do. This morning I had my suitcase all zipped up, and I was ready to walk out the door, and I thought of another strategy that my wife and I have, and that is, let's remember these poor ladies that clean our room. And we unzipped it and found a small token of appreciation for my clean room and offered it to them. It's something I never even used to think about. And we do more all the time. Maybe as we get older, like Dave said, we develop a little more empathy for those who are on lower rungs of the ladder than we are. We seldom give impulsively. Sometimes we do. God help us to do better at it. But often our giving comes about as intentional and premeditated effort. And that's what taking the check to council meeting is all about. It's about being ready to distribute. And then being willing to communicate speaks of that joy of restraining ourselves in order to be a blessing to other people. We said we're not going to say a thing here this morning against buying boats. It's an easy target, and they've been whacked around on. But we're not going to say that. But we are going to ask the question, is buying the boat going to rob me of the opportunity to communicate at some point in the future? Is my strategy of restraint going to impact my strategy toward others? That's what we're trying to think about this morning as we think about biblical financial management. I think let's move on to another strategy, the strategy of risk. The slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. Some things seem obvious, and it seems obvious to me that there's more going on here than what's even said. And I think the slothful man was looking for a reason to stay in the house and stay in bed. Reminds us of a saying, you've probably heard it before, that ships are safest in the harbor, but that's not what ships were built for. They're built for sailing. And there's risk inherent in sailing, and there's risk inherent in getting up in the morning and going to work. The slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. I guess all we want to say about risk is reality. It cannot be avoided. And we are called to manage risk in life. We don't want to take the time to get into this very deep. We could have some personal stories to tell, but I'll just say this. I'll summarize by saying, due to some circumstances early in my life, I have come through life very, very, very risk averse. That means avoid risk at all cost. And that sounds good. Risk is surely a bad thing, and that sounds good, but But it's actually inhibited at times my ability even to provide. It's been an inhibitor. It's not always been a blessing for me to be so risk averse. When I was 45 years old, I left a kind of a corporate professional job. Ivan alluded to that I worked in, and I left it and I started a business with my family, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And one of the reasons it was one of the hardest things I've ever done is because it was risky. There was an opportunity to look and feel foolish and to suffer financial loss. And it didn't end up working out that way for us. It ended up working out well. But there was risk involved, and that was what we felt like we were called to do, and we couldn't avoid all the risk. But here is what we can do regarding risk. We can study it, and we did. And yesterday in our topic, we talked about business planning, and we wrote a plan for our business before we ever opened the door. And we were almost obsessive with it. And the reason why is because we're so risk averse. We were trying to prevent catastrophe. There's nothing wrong with being risk averse or not. We marvel sometimes at how other people around us don't seem to have any sense of risk. They're daring. And God made them that way, and that's not all wrong either. You that are more daring are going to have your own set of challenges to work with. Those of us that are more risk averse, we've got our own challenges to deal with. And studying risk is a way of being self-aware about who we are and about how God made us. Help us evaluate whether we're too opposed to risk and driven even into slothfulness. There's a lion out there in the street. I don't think I can do that. Or whether we're too daring and too uncaring about outcomes. So we can study risk. We can assume it. Assume it just means we plowed ahead and we started a family business. We assumed the risk. We said, there is risk. One of the risks that we worried about in our business is, what if, even if it's not true, what if someone says, well, I ate food there and I got sick? That was a risk that we cared a lot about. But we didn't stay under the covers in the morning. We tried to meet the day. And that became our strategy of risk. We tried to overcome our own personal aversion to risk, to move out in the calling of God that we felt was for us. Strategy of risk. We can remove risk. We can remove risk by making the problem go away. We could say, well, we're not going to go in business. But that isn't what God necessarily calls us to do. We can mitigate it. That means we can do something to help prevent it. We can make sure that we're following proper protocols and standards so that nobody does get sick. That's what mitigation means. And then we can insure against it. Or we can usher through some of our cost sharing we share among ourselves. We can provide or obtain support from without. But it's just important. I just wanted to talk about strategy of risk. We've got just a few minutes left. My last strategy I wanted to talk about is very personal to us as well, strategy of debt. And I'm just going to have to be very brief with a personal story and a personal overview for me. And I alluded to it earlier. I became very risk averse early in life, and I also became very debt averse. I experienced something that showed me, I'm just going to say, the downside of debt. And so I have worked my way through life trying to avoid debt at all costs, and even trying in my own mind to spiritually justify that. And I think it can be justified, but I've matured to this point. I want to have a more balanced view of the strategy of debt, and I don't think it's all wrong, but it's not all right. We ought to be very, very vigilant about debt and our use of debt. There's some blessings associated with the use of debt, and there's also some dangers. And so we thought, and we've got just a few minutes remaining, we thought we might just share some of the dangers first, and then perhaps some of the more nuanced look at some of the blessings. So on the next slide, we're just going to share five things. We're going to kind of summarize what some of the dangers of debt are. Number one, debt changes relationships. And I'm hearkening back to this Proverbs 22:7, the rich ruleth over the poor and the borrower servant to the lender. You might have a friend. He might even be your brother. He might even be a brother in the church. And you think you understand your relationship, but borrow money from him or loan money to him, and it will change your relationship. There's risk associated with that. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. It's true. It changes relationships. And we're not going to get further into that for the sake of time. Debt presumes on tomorrow. So it's presumptuous. It's inherently presumptuous because it involves tomorrow. We borrow money today to buy something today that would have taken until tomorrow, and maybe 1,000 tomorrows to buy if we would have saved for it. So it presumes on tomorrow. And therein, number three, it leverages our lifestyle. It leverages our ability to say, let's go ahead and get the boat today, and maybe we can still do some giving tomorrow. Debt helps us to go down that road. Debt is like a drug in that regard. It enables us, and it deadens our senses to questions like that. It just does. We're speaking of the downside of debt. It challenges our relationships, and I mean that within, maybe even within our own household. Maybe I don't care one iota about debt. That isn't true, but just imagine it to be true. But my wife does. I'm not talking about the lender now. I'm talking about my wife and the way we plan our life together. It challenges our relationships because we don't all feel the same about it. And as heads of homes, are we really sure, to hearken back to David's talk, are we really sure that we're hearing, that we're listening and hearing the hearts of our wives as we make decisions about debt? And that's all I want to say about it. Number five, debt does hold financial risk. We heard yesterday what goes up will come down, whether that's our income or the value of our collateral. And that's all true. And we could have a whole workshop or seminar on debt. But those are some of the downsides, and they're real. And we want you to pay attention to them as you think about debt. But, and we intended this list of five to be a counterpart to the first five. So it changes relationships, yet it's also good to be a servant under rule. Remember, the rich ruleth over the poor. There's an inherent discipline to debt that's not all bad. David Bauer told me one time, he said, I actually wanted my boys to take on some debt so they could learn that discipline associated with it. And I just want to concede that there's value there. It is also good to plan and to persevere. Remember, we said debt presumes on tomorrow. It's also good to plan and to persevere. It's good to work through paying off a debt. It's also good to plan for a life of living. What I mean by that is I have spent a lot of my life obsessing against debt. And we live in a house that is very, very old. And it's in need of a remodel. And it's been in need of a remodel for a number of years. And I've avoided it. And I'm at a place in life where I wonder if I've avoided it too much. Because now we're at a place where we've got some money saved up and we're getting ready to remodel our house, small remodel. And yet four of my six children are already gone. And I wonder if I could have better planned for a life of living earlier on with the use of some debt while they could have enjoyed this remodel with us. It is also good to learn to work together. Me and my wife may not view debt the same way, but it's good to work through some of those decisions together. And debt calls for that from us. It is also good to assume prudent risks. Debt is risky. There is financial risk, and yet it's good. It's good at times to assume prudent risks. Now we're out of time, and so we'll just bring our remarks to a close. I would just say once again, biblical money management is a great, great big topic. And we don't have all the answers, and we've done a lot of things wrong. But we do feel a kinship with you and that we're working at it together. And God help us to work together at it successfully. Thank you.